Chapter 24. 3 nights later, after 3 hard days of marching that had every muscle in my body aching, we gathered for dinner around a pathetic campfire. During the day, we'd gathered broken pieces of the small, low-growing shrubs that were clustered around rocks on Newark to make a fire. The fire was for psychological effect. It wasn't hot enough to cook much of anything, although a couple of Brits and Indians heated up water for tea, and everyone got a small cup. For Newark, out in the open, it was a nice evening. Temperature comfortably above freezing. It hadn't rained since early that morning, and the wind had died down to a steady breeze out of the east. The team needed this break together, instead of eating a hurried dinner in cramped tents and crashing to exhausted sleep like we'd been doing. "Hello, Colonel Joseph Bishop," Skippy said over my Z-phone speaker. "How are you this evening?"
"Fine," I mumbled over a mouthful of MRE peanut butter and crackers. "We're eating dinner around a campfire, sort of. What's up?"
"Well, sir, I have an exciting opportunity for you. For a limited time, we are offering a greatly reduced price on wonderful timeshares on Newark."
"Damn." I had to laugh, trying not to spew precious crackers on my lap. "Skippy, who the hell would buy a timeshare on this miserable planet?"
Joe, he scolded me.
"You're missing the point entirely. Think about this. If you purchase our basic timeshare package of 1 week on Newark, that means you do not have to be on Newark the other 51 weeks a year."
"Oh." Everyone around me laughed.
"In that case, hell yes. Sign us all up."
"You won't regret this, sir."
"Seriously, Joe, how's it going down there?
I know what the weather is like. That doesn't tell me how our merry band of pirates are faring right now.
By the way, it looks like you have a mix of snow and sleet coming tomorrow afternoon. Then it will clear up and go back to damp, chilly, and partly sunny."
"Snow? Crap, isn't this almost summer on this freaking planet? And we're on the freaking equator here.
You are not acting as our travel agent the next time we look for a planet.
Skippy, what we have down here is officially a not very merry band of pirates. The gravity is too high, the temperature is too low, and it's hard to breathe, even when you're only walking. Other than that, we're doing just wonderful. How's it going up there?"
"Well, funny you should ask."
Oh, shit. I hated that thing he did, and by now the whole team knew what it meant when he did that. They all looked at me with alarm. I put in my Z-phone earpiece and turned off the speakerphone feature so we could talk privately. Not wanting to be rude, I stood up and stepped away from the fire. "What is it this time? Did somebody forget to turn the stove off before we left?" Man, I was hoping whatever the problem was, it was simple. "It's not like I can go back up there and fix it, Skippy."
"The stove is not a problem, since I already mentioned that the ship currently does not have a galley. I'm working on that. Anywho, to be serious for a moment, Joe, one of the dropships had a slight accident."
"Slight? Like you scratched the paint or dented the fender?"
No, slight, like a gas pocket on a moon exploded when I drilled into it. The dropship flipped over and now it's stuck in a hole."
"What the hell, Skippy?
Damn it, I leave you nice toys to play with and you break them. I can't trust you with anything valuable up there."
"Hey, to be fair, I'm working almost blind up here. That moon contained materials I need, and its orbit currently has it on the other side of the planet. I was using the dropship's crappy sensors to see what I was doing. The sensors didn't detect the gas pocket because the Theranin, here's a real shocker for you, didn't design their dropships to be used as drilling rigs. Anyway, I have another dropship on the scene, and I'm using combots to dig the first dropship out. It should be fine, except we'll need a new one, because the cabin got kind of crushed and it won't hold air pressure anymore. Also, I wouldn't try flying it down through an atmosphere at this point. The heat shield is not in good shape."
"Bluff it for me, Skippy, okay?"
"What?"
"Bottom line up front. Bluff. Tell me the important stuff first. Come on. You know U.S. military slang."
"Oh, yeah. All right. The bottom line is this little accident will add a week, maybe more, to the schedule. Most likely 16 days. I have to divert resources to recover and repair the dropship, and while I'm doing that, the dropship won't be mining ore for me. While I'm fixing that busted dropship, I will still be working on the Dutchman. However, work on the ship will be delayed. There is no way around it before you ask me some stupid questions. This was always a substantial risk, Joe,
My original estimate had likely delays built into the schedule, so this delay only adds 8 days to when I expect the ship to be functional again. I sighed.
Understood, Skippy. You're doing the impossible up there, we appreciate it. And I won't insult you by telling you to be careful.
Indeed, you do not need to tell me to be careful.
I'm working on the edge here already, Joe. It would not take much to tip the scales, so that I'm using up resources faster than I'm creating new ones.
You won't let that happen, right? I asked hopefully.
I'm doing my best.
What scared me was his voice didn't have the usual snarky cockiness to it. He was scared, or at least very concerned. And from Newark, there was absolutely nothing we could do about it.
Skippy's pizza delivery had soft-landed in a swampy area. We had to wade through bone-chilling water up to our waists to get to it. Part of me was wondering if Skippy had done that on purpose, although I'm sure he had done the best he could from the other side of the star system. By the time we got through the icy water to the package, I couldn't feel my legs, or my balls. The container was roughly twice the size of a large footlocker. It was jammed, packed, partly with medical supplies we might need after the assault. Most of it was food. Sort of food. It was dehydrated sludges. All of it. What the assault team needed was basic nutrition, not gourmet food. We got the container back to dry land and popped it open. Soldiers began pulling out the contents and laying it out on the ground for sorting.
Chocolate banana, plain banana, strawberry banana, banana curry.
Sir, most of these are some type of banana flavor, Williams announced in consternation.
Oh, crap, I slapped my forehead. Skippy thinks monkeys love bananas. I groaned, frustrated. If we get another delivery, I'll request a better variety of flavors. Captain Gomez uncapped a sludge, poured water in to rehydrate it, shook it up, and drained it in one gulp.
Food is fuel, he shrugged. We can eat real food when we get back to the Flying Dutchman.
Right. Everyone, I reminded people, we bury our trash. Can't have a Cristang ship seeing empty sludge packets lying on the ground. And let's drag the empty container into water deep enough that it will sink. Put some rocks in to make sure. To set an example, I picked up a sludge packet without checking the flavor, poured water in, and gulped it down. It was maybe supposed to be plain banana flavor. You couldn't quite tell with Theranin sludges. Most of them had a nasty, artificial taste. When we got the sludge supply back out of the swamp and unpacked, we divided them up evenly.
Does everyone have real food left? I asked Smythe quietly.
I think so, sir. Everyone ate a good breakfast this morning.
I saw that.
I've been watching people for signs of fatigue, nagging injuries, and that no one was skimping on nutrition.
I have 8 MREs left. I'm going to save them for anyone who is wounded.
Sir?
Captain, I've survived on sludges before. It's not new to me. They provide energy, and they will sustain you. You will also get heartily sick of drinking them very quickly. If anyone is wounded out here, it's going to be quite some time before they can get full medical treatment aboard the Dutchman. I'd like them to have at least real food to eat. Keep their spirits up.
Oh, good thinking, he agreed.
I'll get a bag together.
Smythe put an empty bag on the ground, and I asked people to donate 1 real food item, explaining that the bag would be reserved for injured soldiers or to be rationed out as treats after the battle while we waited for Skippy to fix the Dutchman.
I have 8 incredibly delicious MREs here, I said as I held them up for view. 5 American, 2 French. I nodded to Giraud, who had traded with me earlier. And, I peered at the wrapper, I guess this one is Chinese.
I'll start the kitty by donating all of them. I'm tired of carrying the damn things anyway.
That drew a chuckle, and I put the MREs in the bag.
1 only, if you have it to spare. Keep the rest for yourself. Trust me, you are going to get very tired of existing on nothing but sludges.
He speaks the truth, Giraud testified, sticking his tongue out disgustedly, and we bumped fists.
Neither of us wanted to remember that unpleasant aspect of our first time aboard the Flying Dutchman. We got a good donation, and the bag then held 35 real meals of various types. None of it could be considered yummy. All of it had to taste better than a sludge. Smythe switched off the duties of carrying the goodie bag between soldiers, and we were extra super careful with it while crossing streams. I noticed that for the next 4 days, no one that I could see ate anything except sludges. Our shared suffering in that regard was a bonding experience. To spare the inexperienced the worst of the ordeal,
I falsely let it be known that I didn't mind the plain banana flavor, which actually was among the very worst of the sludges. The plain banana, unmasked by other less unpleasant flavors like chocolate, strawberry, or even curry, was just bland, artificial, gritty, and had an oily mouthfeel that lingered nastily on your tongue. It was my fault for not requesting a better variety of flavors from Skippy. Although now that I thought about it, there hadn't been a whole lot of sludges left aboard the Dutchman when we began the second voyage, and no one had thought to request Skippy to make more. No one. Like me. Since no one liked the banana flavors, maybe Skippy had sent us whatever he had left over from the first voyage. That was doubly my fault. Either way, I ended up with nothing but dehydrated plain banana sludges, having traded away all the less nasty flavors. Every sip of oily, gritty, bland sludge reminded me about the value of planning ahead. This is certainly a lesson I wasn't going to forget. All I can say is, when we finally got back aboard the rebuilt Flying Dutchman, I was going to eat delicious, juicy cheeseburgers for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, every day the first week. Even if we no longer had a galley, and I had to grill the burger over a reactor. When we'd collected the real food, I selected a sludge at random from my pack, popped the cap, and poured water in to rehydrate it. Drink up, everyone. Enjoy your yummy sludge. And hey, today is Friday. Only 2 more working days until Monday. Despite how tired I was that night, I walked away from the campsite in order to talk to Skippy in private. While I told myself that I wanted to thank him for the food, I had to admit that I missed talking with his irascible self. No one had insulted me for several days. It felt weird. "Hey, Skippy, how you doing up there?" "Busy," he said tersely. "Oh," I said, feeling awkward. "Sorry. I'll leave you alone then." "No need, Joe. I'm not that busy." At the moment, I am in the extremely delicate process of creating exotic matter in what used to be one of our cargo holds, using basically a coffee pot, a missile warhead, and 2 combots that, despite my best effort at modifications, absolutely suck at anything but combat. If this goes south, even on Newark, you'll need to shield your eyes from the explosion. Don't worry, I am very confident. Fairly confident. Somewhat confident. Okay, yes, I'm making this shit up as I go, all right? Give me a freaking break. And I wouldn't be too hopeful about the ultimate fate of that coffee pot, in case you were wondering. However, carrying on an intelligent conversation with one of you monkeys takes up like 1 octillionth of my brain power, and half that when I'm speaking with you, so what's up? There was the Skippy I knew. Simply wanted to say, sincerely from the bottom of my stomach, thank you for the food delivery. I was going to throw in free breadsticks, but, you know, what used to be the galley is currently highly radioactive, so that was not an option. We appreciate the thought, Skippy. Right then, I couldn't think of anything else to say. Yeah, you're welcome. No problem. He sounded like he felt the conversation was lagging, too. Before it got any more awkward, I said, "Well, I'll let you go. How did the day go? I've been tracking your progress. Your group is making impressive progress." It seemed Skippy wanted to keep talking. "Well, we didn't roll or sink an RV today. That's progress. Everyone here is sore, not that the Spec Ops people will admit it. Our muscles have adjusted to the extra gravity, our joints and tendons are slower catching up to the extra strain. I stepped in a hole and twisted an ankle yesterday morning." "But did you talk to one of the doctors about it?" "No, I taped it up myself." He sighed. "Joe, you brought 2 civilians with you to have doctors on the team. You're making them walk all this way for nothing?" "Skippy, they didn't come with us for something as simple as someone tweaking an ankle. They're here to take care of combat injuries. There's not much to be done other than taping my ankle. I can't stop walking. I don't want to waste their time, and I don't want Spec Ops people to think I'm weak." "Joe, Joe, Joe. Once in a great while, you have a good idea. The rest of the time, you are dumb as a rock. Surely you are not the only monkey in your party with an injury that is being either ignored or attended to amateurishly." "Probably not." I thought of the various people I saw moving around stiffly in the mornings. "And by not seeking the best treatment available, they risk becoming combat ineffective. As the commander, shouldn't you be setting an example?" "Crap. Skippy, you not only can build a starship out of moon dust, you know more about human psychology than I do. I should know that.
You're right. I will talk to one of the doctors tonight. And soon, before they fall asleep. That's enough about me. How are you doing?
Good enough. I've been monitoring the progress of the archaeology team. They have found a new chamber behind a wall. It was buried in a rock fall, perhaps at the same time when the main part of the cavern washed away and the roof collapsed.
Anticipating your question, Colonel Chang is making certain they are being safe and not taking unnecessary risks with the project. The team is very excited. They haven't told you about it yet. They have found fragments of bronze plates with what appears to be writing. Colonel Chang hopes to find more writing samples buried further down. This new chamber overall is shallow. Whatever is in there will not require a deep excavation.
Wow. Writing. Well, that's awesome. Don't get your hopes up, Joe. This writing, if that's what it is, looks like nothing but scribbles.
The only way we will ever be able to read any of it is if we find more samples, a lot more, with pictographs.
We can hope, though.
How are things going with you up there?
Good. Good enough. No new setbacks to report.
While I have you, Joe, I've been thinking about that favor you asked.
Huh? What favor?
He already delivered the pizza.
The favor about you and me riding off into the sunset together, remember?
You're studying up on how to fly the ship so the two of us can drop the crew off at Earth after I contact the Collective.
Oh, yeah. I tried to keep the hopefulness out of my voice.
I thought about it, and I can see why you think it's a good idea. I am willing to give it a shot. Unfortunately, my analysis has determined the scenario is extremely unlikely. As you know, my memory is vague concerning the Collective. One thing I am certain about is that once I make contact, I will no longer be able to help you. I might not even be able to communicate with you in any way. I may, very suddenly, simply be gone.
Oh, I hear you, Skippy. Thanks for telling me.
Sorry.
Skippy, you saved our entire home planet. You have nothing to apologize about. We all knew the risks when we came out here.
I yawned. Talk to one of the doctors about my ankle. You have a good night, okay?
You too, Joe. Sleep well. From the pizza delivery site, we had 2 solid days of walking over rolling hills in a steady, cold, dreary rain with wind blowing straight in our faces. For meals, we had cold, rehydrated sludges. At night, we collapsed in our tents and sleeping bags with wet clothes hanging on a line from the tent roof, dripping on us all night. In the morning, we got up and did it all again. The novelty of walking across an alien landscape, being the first humans wherever we went, was wearing off. Every single one of us wanted to get to the scavenger base, get the attack over with, and get back aboard the Flying Dutchman. Apparently, I had earned a measure of grudging respect from Smythe. He had taken to walking with me once I had demonstrated that I could keep up the pace. And I could, simply by concentrating on putting one foot in front of the other, hour after hour, day after day. What I could not do very well would be to carry a heavy pack all day in 14% higher gravity and oxygen equivalent to high altitude on Earth and then go directly into combat. The Spec Ops people could. They'd trained for it, mentally prepared for it. At the end of the day, all I wanted to do was gulp down a nutritious sludge and sleep. A swirling gust of wind blew fat, cold raindrops right into my eyes. I wiped my eyes and lowered goggles from atop my head to protect from the stinging spray. They were fancy high-tech Cristang goggles that repelled water and didn't fog up inside. Even so, they were goggles, and wearing them constantly grew tiresome after a while.
"Lovely weather here, Captain," I said to Smythe, who had put his own goggles on.
"Is this what Scotland is like?"
"No."
Smythe looked surprised at my question.
"Scotland is ruggedly beautiful, most times of the year. If you like the outdoors, it's a wonderful place. It is mostly open country like this."
He swept his arm across the eastern horizon, partly obscured by rain and low clouds.
"And it can be wet," he admitted. "No more so than the rest of the island, of course."
It took me a moment to realize that by the island he meant Britain. As an American, I thought of Britain first as a country, not an island. When I hear the term island, I think of someplace tropical with palm trees and coconuts, and tropical drinks, with little umbrellas, and slices of pineapple.
"That's where you train? The SAS? In Scotland?"
"Scotland? Sometimes.
22 SAS is based in Hereford near the Welsh border. Part of our selection training takes place in the Brecon Beacons of Wales. That area is somewhat similar to this here. The weather can be very unpredictable, with wind coming off the Irish Sea.
That's one advantage of Newark, I suppose. The weather here is predictable. Lousy all the time. My hometown in Maine can have bad weather. At least there the whole area is mostly covered with trees. It cuts the wind. And we have plenty of fuel for a campfire there.
Have you ever been to Britain? He asked. I shook my head. Smythe went on. You would like the walking trails in Britain. In the States, I understand that your walking trails are mostly in the woods, and you cook your meals over a fire and sleep in tents. In Britain, we have walking trails that go from one village to the next. You can stop at a pub for lunch and dinner and stay in a guest house overnight. It's very popular, particularly in areas such as the Cotswolds and the Yorkshire Dales.
That sure sounds tempting right about now.
The trails go right into a village?
Yes. The difference is, Smythe explained, most of your trails in the States were set up by governments on public land or on private land where the owner allows access. In Britain, the public has access across private lands because for thousands of years, peasants had right of access to get water, to drive their animals to market or to pasture. The current landowners can't block the public from walking across their land because of the historical right of access. There is a group which organizes what they call a mass trespass once a year, to walk all the trails in Britain in order to maintain the public's right of access.
Huh, I said. Man, that would piss off a lot of people back home. America hasn't been around for long, compared to Britain.
Different standards, Smythe concluded.
We stopped talking after that as the path took us up a long, steep hill, and I couldn't manage more than grunts. Even Smythe appeared winded from the climb. We paused at the summit.
The mountains of Afghanistan are like this. At altitude, you get to the top of a climb, he said, gasping. And you want to catch your breath, but you can't.
I nodded. I was with the 10th Infantry Division. The 10th used to specialize in mountain warfare. Then they sent me to the jungles of Nigeria, and then to Paradise. The first place I was stationed on Paradise was so flat, it looked like Kansas.
The rain stopped in mid-morning the next day. There was a strong, constant wind from the southeast this time that seemed to literally blow the clouds away. By early afternoon, the wind dropped to a pleasant breeze, the sun came out, and the temperature soared high enough that I stripped down to a long-sleeved shirt. People's spirits rose with the temperature, grim faces replaced by grins, grunts replaced by laughter. Taking advantage of the break in the weather, I unrolled my damp sleeping bag, turned it inside out, and tied it to my pack so it could dry. Also, I hung wet socks from my belt. Everyone did something similar. The sunshine on my face actually felt warm, even a little hot at times.
Captain, I said to Smythe, Skippy tells me this nice weather is going to last until around midnight, then we're getting rain showers. We're still ahead of schedule. I want a 2-hour break for lunch. We'll get the tent set up with flaps open so they can dry out, and we can string clotheslines from those rocks over there.
We will walk a bit later into the night to make up the time. The ground ahead is pretty flat, and there's no large streams to cross until tomorrow.
To my surprise, Smythe didn't protest the delay. We got tents and clotheslines set up quickly, and we all took a nice break in the sunshine, sitting or laying on dry rocks.
It's not so bad now, I mused to Tanaka and Jeng.
We were sitting on a flat rock with our boots and socks off, rubbing our feet. The two civilians had held up very well to the rigors of our grueling hike across Newark.
You know, I wonder what this area was like before.
Before? Zheng asked.
And before Newark got pushed out of its original orbit, I explained.
We're 700 kilometers from the equator here. This must have been what? Jungle? Desert? Something hot.
People, the natives, they might have come here on vacation.
I don't think their society had vacations. They probably didn't have the technology for leisure travel, Tanaka said.
They had the wheel. That means roads, I pointed out defensively. Anyway, you know what I mean. This was a nice place back then.
I looked around at the low rolling hills, valleys crisscrossed by streams that sparkled in the sunlight.
Like that hill over there, I pointed to the south. It has a nice view of that lake. It would have had nice breezes for cooling. I wonder if anyone lived up here.
Zheng shaded her eyes and looked around. I couldn't tell whether she was irritated that I disturbed the rest she'd earned.
Most of this landscape was carved by glaciers when Newark was frozen solid before the orbit became elliptical. That lake, even that hill, may not have existed back then. That will be a big problem for archaeologists. Much of the evidence of civilization here, cities, buildings, roads, like you said, will have been scoured away by glaciers. The glaciers, even here, could have been substantial. The science team is having a debate over whether Newark's surface froze completely over or whether there might have been a strip of open ocean near the equator during summers.
Perhaps because she saw the crestfallen look on my face, she quickly added,
"The natives didn't deserve what happened to this planet. No one does.
Except maybe the people who did this." "What are the odds Newark is the only planet they threw out of orbit?" I asked bitterly. My nice sunny good mood was fading. "If I ever find those MFers,
Colonel," Zheng said and tapped my shoulder gently, "we have a nice day here, a nice afternoon. Let's enjoy it while it lasts, okay? Enjoy it for the natives, because they can't. No more talk about glaciers, I promise."
Not thinking about glaciers for a while was nice.
"Uh-oh, Joe," Skippy called me while I was wading across an icy cold stream that was up to my chest. Making the situation extra special was that because the water was deep, I had to make two trips across. It took two trips to carry all my gear high over my head so it wouldn't get wet.
"Give me a minute, Skippy," I said with almost a gasp. The cold was taking my breath away. Of course, he called when I was in the deepest part of the stream. "Kind of busy here right now."
"No immediate rush, Joe," he responded with a peevish tone. When I got to dry land, I set my gear down on a rock. On top of me being soaking wet from wading the stream twice, it was raining. It was always freaking raining on Newark. Following the example of the Spec Ops people, I did squats with my rifle over my head, then dropped and did 50 push-ups to get some warm blood into my chilled muscles. There were only 5 people still in the process of crossing the stream, and they didn't need my help, so I turned my attention to our annoying AI.
"What is it, Skippy?"
"A potential problem, Joe. A few minutes ago, I overheard the scavenger leaders talking. 2 of them are taking a group of laborers out in a truck to a site where they previously found parts of the Elder Starship buried in the ground. They are loading the truck now."
"Damn it. That was the last thing we needed.
If the scavengers were in 2 places, we would need to plan and coordinate 2 simultaneous attacks. Depending how far the Kristang drove in their truck, it might take us a long time, walking night and day, to catch up with them. Although we were still slightly ahead of schedule, we couldn't delay an attack for very long because we couldn't risk the Kristang ship arriving early and spoiling all our plans."
"This Elder site they're driving to, how far is it from their base? And do you know if they're planning to stay there overnight?"
"They are planning to stay overnight, 1 night only. This particular site has been picked over pretty thoroughly, Joe. It is quite desperate of them to go back there, hoping they can dig up something of value. Without air transport or their RV, they can no longer travel far from their base. This limits them to sites within roughly 80 kilometers. The leaders know that an extended excursion away from the base would make them vulnerable to attack by their laborers. Without air power, the leaders are feeling very vulnerable. They're absolutely right to be concerned. Their workforce is extra unhappy with their leaders. They've lost both of their aircraft and their RV, and they let what they think was an extremely valuable Elder power tap get away. The Elder artifacts they have recovered so far are not valuable enough to pay much more than the costs of the expedition, so the laborers know there will not be much, if any, profits to be shared. The workforce is ripe for a violent mutiny, Joe."
"That's good for us. Where is the Elder site they're going to? Can you show me on my Z phone?"
"There is a map on your phone now."
"Huh. Damn, that's almost between us and the scavenger base." Skippy had put a blinking dot for the Elder site on top of the map we used to guide us to the scavenger base. Our route passed within 20 kilometers of where the scavengers would be staying overnight.
"Do you know the route that truck will be driving?" I asked. And immediately a series of red dots appeared on the map, outlining the route the Kristang were planning to drive. The last 40 kilometers of their route overlapped the route we planned to walk. It made sense. We were now approaching the scavenger base from the south, and there was only 1 good route that avoided going up and down hills all day. We would follow a river valley. The Kristang and their truck understandably planned to do the same thing.
"Skippy, thank you. I need to think about this. We can watch their truck from the satellite feeds?
You won't normally be able to do that through the thick clouds you have overhead now. I'll add an icon on your maps so you can see where they are. The truck is leaving the base right now. I assure you that no one aboard that truck is singing the Kristang version of 99 bottles of beer on the wall. Joe, these lizards are not a crew of happy campers.
Got it. Thank you.
I went over to Smythe, who was checking that everyone was ready to move out quickly, before our half-frozen muscles stiffened up. Explaining the situation, I showed Smythe the map on his own Z-phone.
Bloody hell, he said. This complicates things somewhat, doesn't it?
Yes, I agreed.
Although, he mused, scratching his 2-day growth of beard, it could be an opportunity.
That also, I agreed again. I see this as more risk than opportunity. For opportunity, you're thinking we can take out this excursion party of Kristang and steal the truck, then we ride it into their base compound and take them by surprise?
Essentially, yes. It is tempting, surely. That sort of plan depends on our spy in the sky intercepting communications from the excursion party, then faking signals from them. Can Skippy do that, do you think, sir?
Captain, that would not be a problem for Skippy. The problem is the excursion party will be overnighting only 70 kilometers from the base. That close, they can use simple radio to communicate, not route the signal through a satellite. When they send signals through one of their satellites, Skippy can intercept and squelch or alter the signal. He can't do anything about radio transmissions through the air.
Bollocks, Smythe declared. That's out then. Unless we take them all out at once, we risk cocking it up. The timing would be too dicey. Too many ways it could go pear-shaped in a hurry.
Yeah, I said, not completely sure of his British slang. I understood the basics. How about this? We proceed to here. I pointed to the spot where the Kristang truck would intercept our planned walk-in route on their return journey. And we wait for them to go by. Then we can follow their truck. We can't go ahead of them, they'd see our footprints. And that river valley is the only practical way to get from here to their base, unless we go all around these hills, way to the east. I don't like that option.
As much as I hate to pass up this opportunity, sir, Smythe observed sourly, we are not out here to defeat them in detail any longer. We already knocked out their air power. Now we need to hit them all at once.
Rubbish. We'll need to explain to the lads why we're not hitting them.